just seems more important to hear from our guests who have come a long way to speak to us. I'll just say a little bit more about Amoga City and Yashasagar. They are both public preceptors in India. So, and they've been, I guess, have considered themselves Buddhists all their lives as well. But as public preceptors, they have overall responsibility for all the men in India in the ordination process, and that's over 800 men. And so it's quite a big responsibility with a lot of dedication and commitment. And so I'm very much looking forward to hearing from both of you tonight. So we'll hear first from Amoga City.
So, brothers and sisters, really very happy to be here at this Croydon Buddhist Center. And I think I keep saying, and would like to say again, that's really so wonderful to come here and say my brothers and sisters. Really wonderful. I mean, I never imagined that I would come and would talk to our brothers and sisters like this. And it's so wonderful, actually. And I think that you can imagine, I mean, how and why it is very wonderful for us to come and say to our brothers and sisters how happy we are. So just our coming to this center, we felt really very happy and very nice. Everybody inquires about us. Is it very cold for you? It's true, it's very cold. Really very, very cold. But wonderful. We don't feel it. Rather, we feel very warm. It is warmness of your metta, your maitri, our brotherhood, sisterhood, that we experience. And often I was told, rather, English people in England, people are very cold, but I don't find it. It seems that you people are so warm, so friendly, just wanted to talk with us, you wanted to be very warm with us, and because of this warmness, I think we are not feeling very cold here. And truly, very, very happy to be here. It's really difficult to say something within 20 minutes, but briefly, I would say something about myself first. I think Charu Nalaka, Ishwasagar, and now our very senior, most very respected Dhammacharini Dhyanachari. She is not here because of her illness. But we are repeating same thing again. But I would like to repeat because it gives you some idea about ourselves. So I was born in a family where they were not very educated. They didn't know how to write, how to read. But still, really, I think that mean I had a wonderful opportunity, and that was to come across with Buddhism, the family I was born in. Actually, my personal life is very strange. Very briefly, I would tell you, I was born in 1962, and I was told that I was premature baby, 7.5 months, and I just took birth. Maybe I was in a hurry to come into this world. But doctor said that very less chances that this baby will survive. I survived. I'm here now. But on top of that, after 4 months, my father committed suicide. And all blame was put on my mother. My family members, they believed that she was unauspicious to the family. So they driven her away. So all this suffering, you know. But even though all this suffering were there, I think still, I think I had some sort of hope, some sort of, you see, I mean, something good in my life. And that was because of my grandmother. Though illiterate, but I would say that she was my first teacher who introduced me to the Buddha. So she would take me to the Buddha, very emotional, very devotional woman. And would offer incense stick to the Buddha and would ask me to offer incense stick. I would do that. Very small boy, maybe 5 years or something. I still remember that every day we did that at home. Dr. Ambedkar's picture and Buddha's picture, standing Buddha. that was there. And we would offer incense. And my grandmother, very emotional, tears in her eyes, and would say, "Hey Buddha, give my grandson some brain and make him a good man." Very interesting. I think now, if somebody goes to God, mother or grandmother would say, "Give my son or my grandmother, grandson money, make him rich. Let him have car, beautiful wife, something like that." But she would say, "Give him some brain and make him a good man." I would say, "Yeah, Buddha, give me some brain and make me a good man." So it has very strong effect on me. And I could see she experienced her own sons. She experienced people around her, all sort of bad habits, alcohol, gambling, quarreling. So she wanted me to be good. So that was there. I wanted to be good. So I was introduced to the Buddha. I was introduced to Dr. Ambedkar because of my grandmother. And I was growing up. And I really wanted to change my life. So I wanted to be good. So I started reading books. Books on Dr. Ambedkar. Books written by Dr. Ambedkar. Books on Buddhism. And those were my sources to learn more about Buddhism. And I was growing up and I was really very much sort of say fascinated by Buddha's teaching, Dr. Ambedkar's teaching. And I was still asking myself, how I'm going to be good? I don't know, I mean, how much brain I got, but I really wanted to be good. So that I was pursuing in my life. And started to read books because I wanted to have knowledge. I wanted to have some brain. And actually, I was looking for something which I couldn't understand, but something I was looking. Because as early on, I came to know death, death is there. So always question birth, death, what this life is about. And I was very shy and very quiet child. Would go to garden and think for a long, long period what this life is about. So I was not a child in a way, because my life, I was thinking more and wanted to know more. So I started reading books, reading novels, good literature. I got interested in art, culture and other things. So they were really very much inspiring. And I think maybe I was in 10th standard or something. As I was very much interested in reading, so I read somewhere a small poetry. I don't know who wrote the poetry, but those four lines really inspired me. And I think I changed my looking towards myself and towards the world. And that poetry, it was, "I had blues because I had not shoes until on the street I met a man who had not feet." Oh, I was very much concerned about my suffering. Oh, poor me. I lost my mother and father. And what a miserable life I'm living. And I lost my mother and father, and top of it, I'm born untouchable, where nobody want me, nobody accept me. So what a miserable life. And I was just reflecting on that and would feel sorry about myself. But when I read that poetry, it seemed that, oh dear, look around. So much suffering, all kind of suffering. And I'm just concerned about myself, my suffering or something. And that really helped me to sort of change my mind. And reading Dr. Ambedkar, I realized that Buddhism, it is something to do with mind. So his talk after conversion, he said so many things, but I still remember what he said. There is difference between an animal and human being. An animal can live happily if it gets food, sleep, biological needs, and it can be happy. But not human being. They can get good food, they can get good sleep, all biological needs, but still, that is not enough, because human being got mind. So that is, I thought, this is it. So what I would do, I would read books on psychology. And I thought that I would get something from it. And all sort of books I started to read. And I was growing this way, and then I committed myself to Dr. Ambedkar's vision to bring change in the society, because the suffering I got, it is due to this particular, what we call in India, that it caste system, horrible, unimaginable. You cannot imagine somebody, you human being, but somebody even doesn't want to touch you. Not only that, if your shadow falls on them, they feel they are polluted. Can you imagine this? And so much anger in me. And I wanted to do something, I wanted to change something. So we gathered so many youths and started doing some activities. But interesting enough, Dr. Ambedkar had to say something different. He never sort of encouraged to do anything which will sort of promote violence, or which will sort of promote revenge or anything like that. He had a very creative approach, because truly he believed that Buddha, that is the only answer to all this kind of suffering. So I was trying to learn Buddhism, I was trying to teach Buddhism, but still, let me tell you, brothers and sisters, still something was missing there. And what that something, I couldn't understand. And I felt that, okay, I learned something about Buddhism, and my Buddhism was, I'm a good man. I don't beat anybody, I don't kill anybody, I don't steal, I don't lie, something like that. So I'm very good Buddhist, something. But I was not happy with that. It is not just something to be good. So what was it actually? Because there were many of my friends who had different faith and religion. They were good people. I had very good friendship with them, very upright people. So what it is I'm looking for? And it happened that in 1988, I came in contact with one Dhammachari in particular. That was Padma Vajra. Some of you might know him. We were young. I was maybe 26 years old. And somebody asked me that there is an order member from England, and if you are interested, you could arrange his Dhamma talk. And I was very much interested, because I very much wanted that. Unfortunately, there were so many Theravadi monks who didn't respond to my request. They were not interested to give talk. They were only interested to perform some puja. I was fed up with them. But this particular man, and they were fed up with me too, because I would ask many, many questions, and they would simply say, you haven't got faith. But this particular man was different. He was young, and I had many, many questions, to be frank. And sometimes I would quarrel with him. But he was different than the monks. He listened, he carefully answered my questions, and then he would suggest something, what Buddha said, this and that, and it was really wonderful. And then I decided, this is what I wanted. And I then came to know about the Bhante Sangha Rakshita. And I had many friends, old, senior citizens, who were at the time of Dr. Ambedkar's conversion, and they know Bhante as well. So they told me, he is our guru. Now, surprise, I didn't come across with this figure before. And they told me so many stories, and then I decided this is what I wanted. So I was fond of reading. So first thing I wanted to do, okay, he's a great figure, Bhante Sangha Rakshita. He found this big order, and he's a very good teacher. So I wanted to read something, what is best of him. So I got hold of Survey of Buddhism. Started reading, and let me tell you, it gave me headache. So I was not kidding it what it is. And just newly I came in contact with the Sangha, and my Kalyan Mitra Chandra Shila said, oh come on, don't bother about this, why don't you read Bhante's talk transcribed in Dhamma Megha. And then I collected few. And first Dhamma Megha I read, that is the individual, the group, and the spiritual community. That was it. I think the very beginning, Bhante says, Buddhist life is committed life. Oh yeah, Buddhist life is committed life. So something you committed to. And it seemed that just everything was getting clear to me. And in particular, when I just read further, Bhante says, I wanted to change myself. I wanted to be happy. I wanted to change the world as well. So what it is to be changed? Huh? And then I got it, what Bhante says, if you want to change, you must die. Huh? Your old self must die in order to bring about your new self. Oh, that's it. Old self, it is conditioned by all this caste system, social hierarchical system, Hindu philosophy based on discrimination. And I could see that. And I thought that, why should I see myself in those terms? So that was a big change. What a relief. And then I could see further. It is not just being a good man, what I'm looking for. And then when I further read that, I strongly believe this is it, what I wanted. And Bhante said, you could become like a Buddha. You could gain enlightenment. You could break three fetters. And then I thought that, oh, now I got what it is to be good mean. What I can do of my life. But one thing I would like to tell you, what I got from Dr. Ambedkar, it is not just about my happiness, my salvation, my development. It is always within the context of my all brothers and sisters who are around me. And very happy to see this particular Buddha image, let me tell you. And Dr. Ambedkar very much wanted standing Buddha, and that's why at my home was standing Buddha. Let me clear one point. He wasn't against meditation, but he wanted standing Buddha. Why? Because so much suffering around the world. We cannot be just confined to ourselves, my development, my life, and this and that. So he wanted walking Buddha, going to people, helping them to get rid of from their suffering and so on. So I had that spirit. I wanted to do that. What I got, I wanted to give to my friends, my brothers and my sisters. So that was the spirit. So seeing this Buddha was really very happy. I don't know exactly what that particular mudra or gesture means, but I believe that that left hand, it is near the heart, and another hand, it is giving gesture. So say, if you see somebody suffering, your hand goes to the heart. You feel it, the suffering. But being a Buddhist, I don't think that you just feel, oh, poor people, oh, these people, they got the suffering. No. You feel it, you see it, suffering, but there is an action. You wanted to extend your hand to help others, and that was what Babasaheb wanted. And let me put in his words, and I would conclude, that is, he wrote very important article in 1950, and that was Buddha and Future of His Religion. I wouldn't say what he wrote, but the very last sentence he concluded with, and that was, propagating Dhamma is service to humankind. And brothers and sisters, we in India committed ourselves to this service of humankind. And I truly believe that Buddhism really can bring the change. And I have seen change coming to the people. They change themselves. I can't believe I am here talking with you in the West. My grandfather would have not dreamt about it. That's something he could do, because we are confined within the society. But now we can talk, we can speak, and we can have brothers and sisters all over the world. It's really wonderful. So I think this is what we are doing. And there are number of stories. Charunalka said that you can tell some stories. I won't tell you many. Just conclude with one particular story, because it's very recent. People come to a retreat. We offer many retreats. We had a very nice meal. But I was thinking, this one meal can be feast of my one brother or sister to come and learn the Dhamma for 1 week. And what happened when they come to learn the Dhamma? Just one story. One particular man I met, and he said that he was hesitant to tell me. I was inquiring about himself, because he asked for ordination. So I was interested, why you got interested, why you want to become an order member, this and that. So he was a bit hesitant, but he opened up himself, and he said he was extremely angry person. People were afraid of him. He would always quarrel with people, drink. His children, his wife were always frightened of him. But somehow somebody told him, why don't you come to retreat? Learn meditation, learn Dhamma. He was a bit reluctant but wanted to try. So he came to the retreat for 1 week. After the retreat, he told me he wept. In the solitary place, he wept, regretted what he was doing, and went back to home. So he told me what his wife said. When this man went to the retreat, this man was a devil. But when this man came back from the retreat, this man was a god. What a change! Just one retreat could do. And there are number of stories. Karuna Maya is here. She knew number of women, how they changed their lives. And I think we, being a man and male-dominated society, we have some privileges. We have some freedom to go here and there. But for women, it's extremely difficult. But very happy to tell you, Karuna Maya and Dhyanchari in particular, what they are doing, amazing. Women coming out of their home, old and young, and changing their lives. And it is possible because of our Sangha and because of our teacher, Bhante Sangha Rakshita, and our inspiration from Dr. Ambedkar. So just wanted to share this. Thank you very much, and it is very nice, really, would like to say again that Amal Pushpa, very, very good actually to come to this center, and all my brothers and sisters, very nice to be with you. Thank you.
What am I going to say? Yes, so much Amukh Siddhi has already said. I was just thinking, my coming in contact with the Tiratna particularly, and with the Dhamma, because Tiratna has my first contact with real Dhamma practice and real Dhamma, though I was born in a sort of namesake Buddhist family. My parents were, they themselves used to call Buddhist, but they never ever practiced Buddhism. They always had a god on the wall. And my mother, she thought that I was born because of her fasting for God for 16 weeks. That was what she believed. And that's why that God actually doesn't leave our home till one of our Dhamma Mitra came to my house actually before I become Dhamma Mitra, before I become Dhamma Mitra. And he asked my mother whether she could give some donation. And my mother, being very poor, she said that, what can she do actually now, because she doesn't have very much money to give as a donation. He said that he doesn't want any donation. What he wants is that God. And taking your God from the home is not easy thing in India. Yeah. Because it consider auspicious, it consider unauspicious, it consider that if you take God out from your home, any calamities can come to your home. Anything would happen to your son, daughter, anything would happen to your family. But this Dhamma Mitra was very, very clever, and he asked my mother to give that. And I'm very happy to tell you that nothing happened. Rather, good things started happening actually. Since then, good things started happening. I was just wondering about another thing. Amukh Siddhi's coming to the contact was sort of a very rational inquiry. He wanted to really see things actually in terms of intellectual inquiry. But my coming into contact wasn't a very intellectual inquiry. It was just emotional response to the situation I was in. Actually, I lost my father in my early age. Just I was 10, 11 years old. I never thought that actually I would lose my father. My father didn't die actually. He just ran away from home out of his mental ill health. And my mother just was in a strong suffering actually. She could not bear it. But she didn't have any other option than to bring me up, because I was the only child to my mother. So she brought me up, and while she was bringing me up, it's in India, it's very difficult, because what we are talking about and the community we are coming from is a community which is considered an untouchable community, downtrodden community, and nowadays people are calling it a Dalit community, which is the larger portion of the fourth class in the Indian social system. There are four classes in the Indian social system, and the last class, which is called Shudra, the downtrodden one, and there is even that fourth class, there is a portion which is called untouchables, the people whose touch is not considered an auspicious touch. It is impure, considered as an impure. You cannot imagine, actually, you know, somebody, if you would have been to India, and particularly around Buddha Gaya, you could see that actually those untouchables people, you could see around and their situation. It's still horrible. So we sort of represent that portion of the society from India, and what we are now, you wouldn't believe that. That's what Amok Siddhi was trying to say. So how this change come into being? How it happens? It happens because this very man called Dr. Ambedkar, he knew that the oppressed people for so many years, deliberately oppressed for so many years, if they have to come out of this situation, they have to take the responsibility of their own life. And the only religion that teaches people to take the responsibility of their lives is Buddhism. This is what Dr. Ambedkar saw very clearly. He clearly saw that actually no other religion is asking people to take their own responsibility of their life. Other religions were telling that actually, no, if you want to come out of your misery, your suffering, what you have to do? You have to rely on something. And that something will help you or not, you never know. But Dr. Ambedkar clearly see that the only Buddhism is saying that if you want to come out of any situation, any suffering, any kind of suffering, we were suffered in a different way. We were deliberately put into miserable suffering in that particular society by Indian system, Indian caste system. But we, everywhere, human being suffers for this reason or that reason. So coming out of suffering it cannot be in the hand of something else. It should be in our hand. And that is what Dr. Ambedkar really clearly says that. And that is why actually so many people, those who converted with him, they converted with faith. They were not knowing what is happening with that, actually, where this man is taking them. Only belief is that they believe that this man will take them to the salvation. This man will take them to the happiness. This man will take them to the new life. This is where he is to talk to them. And really, it happens when he converted into Buddhism in 1956 in Nagpur. Everybody feels that as if they've been newly born. And look, actually, in 60 years' time, 60 years hasn't yet completed what we have become. Mm-hmm. This is the power of Dharma. That's what he showed to the people. Unfortunately, he died after 6 weeks of his conversion, after his embracing Buddhism. So we were left actually unknown about Buddhism. We were not knowing. We were definitely knowing that actually Buddhism could change the people's lives. So many things we got from his Dhamma revolution. But we were not knowing how to practice. So my coming in the contact with the Sangha, as I already said that, I lost my father, my mother was bringing me up. And in Indian society, you are already untouchable. You are put aside in that particular society, and not having father adds into that. I never experienced a warmth from the society. I never experienced love from the society. So when I came into contact with Ratna, what I experienced? I experienced love. I experienced metta. I experienced sort of a brotherhood. Because nobody would come to me and ask me how you are, taking my old name. But when I first came in contact with Ratna, as I entered into the room, I've been immediately attended by Dhammacharis, and they asked me, "Oh, you are first time here." That is what should have, must have happened here, actually are already happening here. That's why so many people coming. As they step in, somebody would go and inquire. Somebody would go and inquire very compassionately. This is what actually happened with me. And that was the first thing I really liked. I've been loved by somebody. I've been loved by people I don't know. This is something actually, you know, means I started really getting from. So, though suffering was around me, I would just tell you actually, my mother started working, and how much she would earning that time? She was earning 7 rupees. 7p? 7 rupees actually she was earning, and we both used to live on that. No, not a rich situation. It's a very poor situation. I used to hate the rainy season, because whenever the rain comes, we hardly get a place to sleep. My house was 10 by 10 hutment. That was that. And if it is dripping all the time, it was not possible for me to sleep on the floor. So I used to hate the rain. Only the non-dripping roof I got when I came into community for my ordination training. That was the only roof actually I got where I felt secure. Otherwise, I never ever liked the rainy season. That was the situation I was in. But it wasn't giving me any psychological difficulties. It wasn't that actually, I am poor and now psychologically I am breaking down. Somewhat in that society, I never felt, amongst the Atiratna community, I never felt that I am psychologically weak. Rather, what I was looking for, that warmth, that Kalyan Mitrata nowadays we are calling. I didn't know that actually this is Kalyan Mitrata, but this is the warmth I was getting, and my whole spiritual life started with that. It never became a psychological question to me or psychological thing for me that actually now Buddhism will get rid of my psychological problems. It never like that. What I was attracted, it was life I was attracted to. I could see that life is living between the people of the Sangha there, and I could catch that liveliness from there. And that's how my spiritual journey actually started. So many things to tell actually, but I don't want to say so many things. But brothers and sisters, actually, let me tell you one thing, that is, embracing Buddhism was a creative response of Dr. Ambedkar to that situation. People like us who have been deprived for ages, they could have given a reactive response to the situation. They could have become rebellious against the situation. They could have become revengeful. They could have become something actually world is nowadays experiencing. And we hate that. Everybody hates that. We don't want that kind of a world around us. But that didn't happen. If it could have happened, history would have not survived with it actually, you know, what would have happened in India. But he clearly knew that this is not going to be an answer, because he knew that what Buddha has taught. What Buddha has taught? He has taught that the hatred doesn't cease by hatred. It only ceases by metta. That is what Buddhism tells us. And that's what Dr. Ambedkar saw very clearly. So embracing Buddhism was sort of a creative response to that suffering situation. It really brings hope to our life, and it's still bringing hope to many people's life. It's a huge situation. So many people are still in that situation, deliberately deprived of so many things, deprived of human rights, deprived of to live as a human being. You can't imagine what they are looking for. They are looking for hope for the life. They want new eyes so that they can see the world in a new way. They can really see the world, and they can give a new response to the world. Let me just tell you the story which I picked particularly, and I very much wanted Nanshuri to tell something about the woman situation. But the story I'm going to tell you is a woman's story. which I, the woman I interviewed last year. It's a great story, actually. You can see that how people's attitude is changing, how they are seeing the life in a different way, the beautiful way, though there are so many difficulties. This woman who got married actually at the age of 14, which is not a very different thing in India, but she didn't want to get married at the age of 14. But her mother, who was bringing her up because she didn't have father. In India, there is always social pressure, because if the girls didn't get married early age, anything could happen to the girl, and that means people will say that people will blame the family, defame. They would consider that actually the girl bring a defame to the family. So that was the pressure she was in, and she had to then marry a man who she didn't wanted to marry. Then immediately, as you. Everybody know that actually she had 3 children immediately. Yes. Yeah, means one after one. She had three children actually under the age of 21. She was unhappy. She was completely unhappy with this man. She attempted suicide few times. But every time she survived. And the last, where she got this insight, she attempted suicide. She finally thought that actually, no, other suicidal attempts are not working. So I would do my final attempt. I will put myself into the river. So she jumped into the river, but somebody saw her. As she put herself into the river, somebody went and rescued her from the river. She was alive. What she thought then? She thought that she is trying to die, but life itself is not allowing her to die. So she needs to do something with her life. And the same time, she started coming to our Ratna classes. So she thought that actually there are so many women around her who suffers the same way she is suffering. Poverty, oppression, so many things the women are suffering from. So she come up with the hopeful sort of a option or hopeful responses to that. She gathered few women around her and just started making papadam. The papadam? The papadam you usually eat in Indian restaurants actually. And with that, she brings sort of a hope to those women. And then she was already started coming with to the Triratna classes. Slowly, slowly, she was become so confident. And then she started working with an organization called Swachha. Swachha means clean. What this organization does, they work for the rag pickers, particularly women rag pickers. And women rag pickers in India not treated well. I have seen your rag pickers here. Nobody would immediately anticipate they are rag pickers unless you see them having a coat and then what do you call that? That big stick actually, you know, they pick the rag. But in India, immediately you can see that they have always a big sack to carry all the rubbish things. So she is working for that woman, and she is telling them that though we are rag pickers, we are not inhuman. You have to stand for your rights. You have to really work on that. And she is working tirelessly for them. She was not having any hope for her life, but only one glimpse of Dhamma changed her. She gave so many people a new life, new way of looking to the life. Not only those women, she is now giving rag pickers a new eyes to see the world. And now, last year, she got ordained and she became Dhammacharini Yashottama. Yashottama. I don't know the meaning of Tama, but Yasho means glory. It's a spiritual glory she is really giving, trying to give to so many women in particularly. I particularly asked her husband to accompany her while I was interviewing her. I asked that man, when she was away from the home, because she was very activist, would you ever you felt any in secrecy about that. He is a Dhammamitra, and he did say that actually he time to time felt that some insecurity because his wife used to come late. But what he said, he said that I never stopped her going. What I consider rather, he said that if she has to betray with me, it's her karma, not mine. Why should I stop her? I let her go. This is the way actually the life and the complete perception of the society is changing. Letting your woman go out is not a normal in India. Having complete trust in your wife when she is away from the home is not normal in Indian society, but this is coming because of the contact of the Tiratna and particularly contact with the Dhamma. So many stories of that kind actually which tells you so many people are benefiting from the Dhamma. My life is benefiting, Amok Siddhi's life is benefiting, so many people's life is benefiting, and I definitely want to say that actually means I am sitting here talking to you. You never ever imagine that when I first wanted to talk to Subhuti, I wanted to communicate with him, I asked Amok Siddhi to be my translator. It was just 24 years back. He was my translator. And now I am talking to you. I never had English classes. I never paid. I didn't have money to pay. But what is happening to my life? It's in front of you. I don't have to say anything, any other thing. So this is happening with Dharma, this is happening with this very man, and this is happening because of our teacher, Sangha Rakshita, and it is because the Buddha, the walking Buddha we got, which he tells us that just merely your own salvation is not enough. You have to extend your hand to others and lead their light of the Dharma so that so many lights in this world can litter. And then we are sure that the world is not go dark. Thank you very much.
Another city in Yashasagar. We also have Charanalika will be saying a few words to us as well.
Well, I'm continually inspired, and I'm on tour with these guys, so it's just lovely to be here and to hear them speak and to also be able to share them with you. I'm from the India Dharma Trust, and we're actually sponsoring this tour. The India Dharma Trust is one of the Triratna charities. It's exclusive to Triratna, and it's to support the spread of the Dharma in India. And we don't actually do anything. We just raise the money to support what's happening in India, and it's vital work actually, as you've heard tonight. Some things were sort of quite understated. I felt actually this is a complete transformation of a society that has been downtrodden for thousands of years, and I do believe that this peaceful revolution has transformed more lives than any other modern revolution because of the Dharma and what it's doing. It's actually showing people a way to transform themselves, to come out of their situation and to shine, as you can see. So it's very important, and it's no coincidence, I think, that Bhante was there when Ambedkar died and actually had the wherewithal, the knowledge, the ability to speak, to teach. He gave hundreds of lectures, spoke to hundreds of thousands of people at the time. He was there, and he took over, in a way, and taught the Dharma in India after Ambedkar died. And then he came back to the UK, created a movement so that he could then go back and offer it to India. And then his disciples went out to India and continued the work. And it's been going now for over 3.5 decades. So Triratna, in fact, is the most... Well, it's the most rapidly expanding, well-organised Buddhist movement in India. You could almost say it really is the only one. And there's about 1,700 mitras have asked for ordination. There's, I think, about 10,000 mitras. About a third of our order is in India. Probably well over half our Sangha is in India, actually. So as a worldwide movement, half of our Sangha is in India. And unprecedented is the fact that the Indian Sangha has committed to fundraise itself and to fundraise half the money that's needed in India, which it's, when you think about, I mean, you've heard tonight, you know, about the downtrodden classes, and imagine being considered inhuman and then having the courage to ask for money, having the self-esteem to ask for money. That is gradually happening, but we need to be patient, because it's probably going to take a couple of generations until, you know, it's easy, an easy thing to do. But it's happening, but the need is great there. It's a very, very rapidly expanding movement. And so basically what we rely on is regular donations. And if you think about it, you know, a cup of coffee a week could get somebody ordained. I think you mentioned the meal we had tonight. One of those plates of food could take somebody on a retreat for a week. So, you know, money does go a really long way in India. We also would welcome anyone who'd like to pledge to actually raise some money. Be very happy to hear from you if you would like to do that. I'm here. I've got some forms here if anybody's interested in filling one out tonight or taking it home. But just if you do feel moved and you would like to maybe stretch your finances a little bit further and contribute to the India Dharma Trust, it would be greatly, well, not only greatly appreciated, but very, very well used. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, we actually have a few.
Well, yeah, we have questions.
You can have questions. I'm just wondering if one of you wanted to say a bit more about who Dr. Ambedkar was, because I don't think everybody knows.
Yes. Dr. Ambedkar born in the same community we born. As I said, that actually we come from the lowest portion of the Indian class system, that is called Shudra. But within the Shudra, there is another layer which is called untouchables. So he come from that background, deprived of anything, but he becomes well-educated man. He comes over here in London. He studied in LSE, London School of Economics, well-known economist. He stayed in King Henry's Road for a year, actually, when he was studying there. So he's very much plugged in. He comes twice to attend the roundtable conference. First, when he came, actually, he came as a leader of downtrodden classes, and to put their side very strongly that they definitely has, as a human being, a equal right to participate in the Indian society, because these very people were even kept aside to be the part of mainstream society of India. So he was representing that. This very man, well learned in that period, actually nobody was learned like him. So many degrees, qualifications. So much qualification he had, and he is the main contributor, or he is the main instrumental man to write an Indian constitution. It's a huge constitution in the world, the biggest constitution in the world, which combining or putting together whole India. It's still so much caste-based society, but it's pulling it together because of this constitution. So he is one of the major contributors to that. He was the main contributor to that. But on the top of that, he was politician, he was socialist, he was educationalist. He started so many colleges actually. He felt the need that what these people definitely needed, they needed a education. He saw that actually they definitely needed a education. And he started so many colleges. He started an education society called People's Education Society. He tried everything actually to give his people a life which they definitely deserve. He wanted them to give a dignity. But he didn't bring dignity actually like something anything actually which brings to you. He wanted people to take their responsibility of their life. So he keep talking about to the people actually who were completely educated, uneducated, completely poor. But still he would tell them that what you have to do in your life, you have to purify your body, speech and mind. This was his talk actually, well before he embraced Buddhism. So he was very clear in his path that nothing else would bring these people a hope for a real life. The only this path which he considered in the end actually now Buddha's path. But he was very clear from the beginning. Then he wanted India to be a just India. And how this India would be a just India, he always talk about principle, his principle of life. He asked sometime, he said that actually now if you ask me what is my principle of my life, so this principle can be just described in three major principles, that is liberty, equality and fraternity. And he said that I didn't bought them from the French Revolution. I learned them from my master, Buddha. He was so clear about that. And in the end, in the end of his life, actually, he embraced Buddhism with millions of people. And that really changes their lives. His life been completely, what you call that, he's embracing Buddhism. Help people to come out of their old situation. They've been newly born. So much we can tell about him, but in nutshell, actually, he's sort of, you put in the terms of hero, he's a hero of India. Everywhere you go, you will find his statues. Only this man, actually, no, his statues are not just erected by the government. Usually you see that actually the statues of great people erected by the government take lead into that, but his statues are erected by the people. This is very something actually, you know. So he was completely a great man actually, and he just what we are because of him. If he hadn't been there, where we were, we don't know. Yes, up. Same here. Thank you. But you can read actually about him. A lot can be read about him. So many books here he wrote. So you can still go and look for them. Yeah.
Yes. Maybe one book I particularly would like to recommend, written by our own teacher, that is Ambedkar and Buddhism. Mm-hmm. So I think his vision will be very much clear, mm-hmm. and significance of Dr. Ambedkar to the modern world, that will be very much clear, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, we have copies in our library.
Oh, great. Yeah. Yes. And the only thing I actually just want to mention that sometimes people do misunderstand. People consider that he's embracing Buddhism or converting into Buddhism is a sort of a political game, but it wasn't. If you could really see his book, Buddha and His Dhamma, you get completely deep principles. And so far what I have talked about him, you would have some glimpse about that. So, yeah, this was really a spiritual thing for him and for us. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Jai Bhim to everybody.
Jai
Bhim. Yes.